I'm going to call the meeting to order. Is Representative Kalin here? Okay, everyone that is here is a witness that he's losing some of his time. We don't have a quorum. We can't do the minutes. Representative Newton isn't here. Representative Mariani isn't here. And we are leaving on time.
What kind of committee is this?
Yeah.
Can we take a sun break?
Representative Newton, you're up. We don't have a quorum, so you can't move your bill, but please explain it.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My bill 3267 establishes a task force, and this is in continuation of the work that Representative Brown and I did last year on the integration revenue. And what we're doing is establishing a task force that will explore everything that we can about integration revenue while keeping, and I do have an amendment to this bill.
And as soon as we get a quorum, Representative Newton move your bill. Do we have a quorum? Okay. Just go ahead and explain it.
Okay.
Now we do. Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Depke, would you like to move the minutes?
I'll be happy to, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from the last meeting, please.
Representative Depke moves the minutes of March 17th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. For those who are here, I'm going to make an announcement that the ones who aren't here won't get to know. Next week, we have a different committee time because there are going to be floor sessions. So our committee time will be 8:30. We don't know if policy is meeting or not. They're not. Then we will be meeting in the basement hearing room. And so with that, Representative Garofalo.
That's at night, right?
Dream on. K-12 does not meet at night. Okay, Representative Newton, now you can introduce your bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 3267 for inclusion in the...
Representative Newton moves House File 3267 for possible inclusion and your amendment.
Yes, I do have an amendment. It's the A2 amendment.
Representative Newton moves the A2 amendment. Representative Newton.
And first I'd like to address the A2 amendment. This bill deals with the Advisory Task Force on Integration Revenue. The amendment simply brings us back to making sure that the focus of the task force remains with the Office of Legislative Auditor's report and that we don't get too far astray.
Very good. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Garofalo, any questions?
I have no questions, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Newton as amended.
Okay. And now back to the basic bill. The bill has tried to get all of the interest groups involved to a task force. I believe we're up to 17 people. That will meet, the commissioner will appoint some people to the task force. We'll have some from the Senate. And we meet, I believe the first task force meeting has to be before the 15th of September. And we'll have a bill ready and results ready from this task force by the beginning of the session next year. To testify is Scott Kroonquist from AMSD.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee Member Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And we are here to support House File 3267 and very much appreciate Representative Newton bringing it forward. We've looked at this issue, as I know this committee has and a subcommittee have. We think what we really need is a task force as set forth here that includes policymakers and stakeholders to develop some solid recommendations and come back for action next session. And I'll just stop there, Madam Chair. I know we have another more expert testifier here that could answer.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonquist. Ms. Griebel. Welcome, and please state your name.
Chair Greiling and committee members, for the record, my name is Kathy Griebel. I'm the Director of Education Services for the East Metro Integration District, which is a 10-member joint powers district involving St. Paul and nine suburban districts. Today I'm also speaking on behalf of two other joint powers districts, the West Metro Education Program, which involves Minneapolis and 10 suburban districts, as well as the Northwest Suburban Integration School District, which is located 7 districts in the Northwest Metro area. In total, these integration districts enroll well over 200,000 students. Although my testimony today will be brief, I want to emphasize the importance of integration in our communities to every student and family in them. Integration serves as a key structure of opportunity and a foundational element for transforming schools, districts, and communities. There is a well-established body of research identifying the negative effects of segregated schools, including lower student achievement and lower participation in higher education. Conversely, integrated schools have been shown to raise achievement and reduce achievement gaps between white students and students of color. Benefits of integrated schools and classrooms include both academic and social outcomes. Integrated learning environments more fully prepare students, including white students, for our increasingly diverse workplace and society. There is a compelling need for all of us to work hard and persistently to ensure an equitable education for all students in Minnesota. Our students deserve no less, and our communities benefit greatly when that end is achieved. We integration districts fully support House File 3267 that creates an advisory task force on school desegregation and integration. We join with many who believe that the time has come to re-examine the current desegregation rule. It needs further clarification of purpose and definition with clear expectations and outcomes specified. We agree with the 2005 report of the legislative auditor that the purposes of the integration program are unclear, that school districts' use of integration revenue varies, and that unintended consequences can be the result. At present, there are multiple interpretations of the intent of the rule, and all purposes seem worthy and of equal priority. There are many other reasons to fully study the desegregation rule. Yes. Circumstances are different than when it was first implemented. Population demographics have changed. Metro and outstate needs around integration are different and require potentially different solutions. No Child Left Behind requirements have changed accountability around achievement. And implications of school choice, particularly around charter schools, have changed the landscape.
Ms. Griebel, are you about done? Because I think we're the choir here, so we don't need a lot of testimony.
Absolutely. In conclusion, I just want to say that we appreciate the inclusiveness of the proposed legislation to hear from a variety of folks, and that we believe that Minnesota is uniquely situated right now to provide equitable outcomes for all students, and we appreciate the opportunity to help in this important work.
Thank you very much, and I may have done a disservice. I said we're all the choir, and didn't we learn in school never to say all? Rep. Sam Biscuits.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can sing. Representative Newton, you have a number of stakeholders in here, including the Commissioner of Education. Are they all on board?
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Biscuits, yes, they are.
Right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then, Representative Newton, if this law does not go in, if this proposal doesn't go into law, could they still get together and do this?
Representative Newton.
Madam Chair and Representative Biscuits, yes, I would anticipate that this isn't done. We're going to deal with this issue and come to a resolution.
Thank you, Representative Biscuits. Any other questions? Any testimony? Representative Newton renews his motion. House File 3267 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, Representative Kalin. You missed out. You weren't here. And now you've got 15 minutes, and that's it for you.
Well,
or less. And thank you, Representative.
Mrs. Greiling, this is your classroom, right, Madam Chair?
Yeah. Before you start, do you have anyone to move your bill, or do you want me to?
I would be honored if you would move my bill.
I will move House File 3043 for possible inclusion. Representative Kalin, welcome.
And thank you, Madam Chair. I actually just had the two amendments and just lost them. So if we do have two amendments to the bill for discussion and consideration, and When I get those amendments, I can share those with you. But if Dr. Mattson could join me at the table as well. And I did note with the CA that that you started early today, which was even more impressive according to this clock. So good work.
Representative Kalin, we did not start early, so your clock was wrong.
I was just going by this clock. So hopefully my clock...
That's all there is to it.
Hopefully my clock won't get cleaned here. So House File 3043 is a bill that you've seen the main components of before. It is the we're very close to consensus. We're one item, I would think, away from consensus with the department again this year to better align the needs of our students and teachers and parents with the tools that we use for classroom assessment, for student assessment. The gist of the bill is to move the MCA3s, which are currently in development and will be rolled out next year by the department for math for grades 3 through 8, to a computer adaptive model. Many of you know a computer adaptive test that is used in classrooms around the state, purchased at the expense and option of districts, the Northwestern Education Assessment or Evaluation Association, I can remember, NWEA's Measures of Academic Progress. The state has been using a paper and pencil only MCA2 test. I know that you know the frustrations. I know you hear them from your districts. I know the department has heard them and has responded on their own initiative, as well as I think perhaps nudged a tiny little bit by our discussion last year that the Senate scuttled at the very last second. But the language in House File 3043 does a couple of things, and I'll just walk you through the bill quickly and ask Dr. Mattson to briefly share his thoughts, and then I could, if we could go to the two amendments that will sort of highlight the work yet to be done. The Section 1 of the bill adds the computer adaptive requirement for reading and math assessments, and just adds that component to it. The effective date for Section 1 and for the whole bill is for computer adaptive math assessments for grades 3 through 8 in the 10-11 year. And as the standards and then thus the assessments get updated for reading in the 13-14 school year. Section 2 is really the heart of the bill that talks about having as many standardized test questions as possible up front, or as the department is able to design them. We're actually working on that flexible design issue. And then so that every student is getting the same set of questions, and then after that universal set, to then be able to be as adaptive as possible responding. For instance, we know that if Representative Van Zeltz is a fifth grader, answers the questions correct, he'll keep moving up the ladder with tougher and tougher questions so that they can really evaluate how gifted he is at mathematics and hopefully be able to project where his strengths and weaknesses may be at the appropriate level. I would direct, since this is the Finance Committee, I would direct folks to line 5.11, paragraph B, that talks to this issue of using fully adaptive assessments in the full computer adaptive model to the extent that no net loss of federal and state funds occurs. So we know that No Child Left Behind's reauthorization is in question, what's going to happen and what's going to be required of states in terms of assessments. So we want to recognize that we don't want to tie to the department's hands. We don't want to lose money for districts or for the state by making this shift. And then the qualities that we're after start on line 5.33 in terms of the quick turnaround time. With the data and summary reports available within 3 days of when students take the MCA3s, growth information being available for each student, ability for parents, teachers, and administrators to be able to use the data to project achievement in high school, and then providing useful diagnostic information about the strengths and weaknesses of each student and available to parents, teachers, and administrators. So we want to make the test as useful and as responsive to students' needs and parents' and teachers' needs as well. Madam Chair and members, one last point that I'd like to highlight is the urgency for this discussion. We know that the budget resolution adopted by Ways and Means last night has a zero cut for K-12 classrooms. But we also know that our districts are facing dire financial straits. Many of our districts, approximately two-thirds and growing, continue to use their funds for a second test beyond the MCAs at their own expense because of their need to get useful diagnostic information in a timely manner. The department has done a great job, and I want to applaud Dr. Mattson for moving and responding to make the MCAs more useful and to meet the needs of districts. What we hope we can do is to make the MCA3s so useful that districts will not feel compelled ultimately to need to spend that extra money on an extra test, so we can free up dollars and time and get the information we want from the state paid and state developed assessments.
Very good. Dr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Dirk Mattson, Director of Research and Assessment for the Department. The bill that Representative Kalin has put forth, we are already moving toward, as we've mentioned. It will be launched. The math grades 3 through 8 will be launched in adaptive nature a year from now. We conducted field tests and completed those already. I'm pleased to tell you, actually, that we do have, beyond what is described in the bill, we will be doing adaptive on-grade level testing, meaning that students will take items of appropriate challenge within the grade level, and this is a process allowed under NCLB. So we have integrated increased flexibility and more accurate precision within the test. Just a quick note again, I would always, when I get the lovely opportunity to tell you, I will always remind you that there is no single test that will do everything any more than there is one vehicle that will function for the entire state of Minnesota. MnDOT cannot use a Toyota to do dump trucking and so forth. So there will always be a need for more tests. We are going to try and increase the efficiency of these tests, and we believe we've made some great strides in that regard. But just a friendly reminder that there is no single test that will do it. They are all designed for separate purposes. And we are going to try and blur the lines a little bit on a summative versus formative purpose. And we think we've made some strides in that regard.
Thank you very much. Representative Kalin, to your first amendment, A2 or the A1?
The A2 amendment represents agreement between the department and I on a couple of technical issues.
Okay, and members, we got these amendments, as you can see by the time, very, very late, so we're not going to move them today. We're going to understand them, and then when we mark up the bill, with our keen memories, we'll be sure to remember what we're talking about here.
Great. So the A2 amendment is the less saucier version. The A1 amendment is the one that where there's a little bit of spice to, and we have some controversy, so that might help you remember it.
All right, so the A2 one first, because
the A2 amendment.
We're two-thirds done with our time.
Yes, the A2 amendment just cleans up some language related to the paper and pencil equivalent option that would be available for districts that face technology challenges. And the lines 5 and 6 of the A2 amendment reflect the need to provide some flexibility during the first year of the transition from the paper and pencil to the computer adaptive tests to make the results available as soon as possible during the first year, and then the second year would be that three-day turnaround requirement.
Okay, Dr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, members, we find these to be appropriate, as mentioned before in other committees. Even the NWEA did technical work after the first administration, and they did not report results immediately. So this is appropriate technical work that needs to be done after the administration.
Thank you very much. So when we can move, members, it sounds like that A2 is not controversial. A1, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will just direct everyone to the fiscal note related to A2, as well as also the A1 amendment. I think generally just that there is no future fiscal impact, that we've already appropriated the dollars for the development of these tests. The A1 amendment goes to the issue of how adaptive we can make these tests, both in terms of the summative versus formative challenge, as well as an issue that was raised in Representative Mariani's committee about as we move towards the race to the top assessment question, and the department considers joining up to, well, I heard 26 states that can add to that consortium, the department has asked for more flexibility, for the maximum amount of flexibility in joining that consortium. I believe that we have to make a decision as a body and as a legislature about how much we want to set a target and a high standard for Minnesota's assessments as we enable and empower MDE to join those consortia.
Okay, Dr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, members, just a note, the language that's proposed in A1 is language that came from the department, and we believe it is appropriate, not related, though, however, unfortunately, to the consortium issue, but rather because we believe that it allows more flexibility for the test design issue. In fact, our technical advisory committee, a group of national testing experts, have recommended that there may be several ways to do the adaptive portion that is off grade level as opposed to having a second segment of it. And they're still giving the department advice on how to build this. So the request in A1 is just to allow that flexibility so we can design the best test that has the smallest footprint and gives the most information. And we believe this language will allow us to not have to, if our technical advisors and our research shows that it isn't best to do it in two segments, but rather it's maybe the summative and a series of formatives that are specific to one topic area, we'd like to have that flexibility to be able to do that. And that's the language there.
Thank you very much. Representative Demmer.
That was quick, Madam Chair. I had my hand up all about 3 seconds there.
Okay, you used up your time. No.
Okay, Representative Ward. I mean, Madam Chair.
And Representative Demmer, before you came in, this bill does have only until 3:15.
The question I have really is on this amendment. Representative Kalin, you take out the word school districts and insert schools. Is it your intent that the commissioner would actually be and the department would actually be out at every school district looking at every one of the schools they have and assessing their technological capabilities to decide what sort of assessment they should be using?
Madam Chair, I'll defer to Dr.
Mattson. Dr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, actually we are planning to do that for our spring 2011 administration. In next week, we open up a survey asking districts to pre-register and tell us, are you planning to do this on paper or on computer? And we'll be able to load appropriately the right students onto computer and onto the paper administration. Certainly, they'll have those technology requirements well in advance of that time.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would assume that that's a much, much bigger job than school districts. If we're looking at individual schools, is there a cost to this? And are we, I'm thinking paper and pencil, I'm thinking computer. I mean, we're talking some cost here. Is that
Dr.
doable?
Mattson.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, the cost, we currently are doing computer tests, right, in science and in MTEL. So we do have technology specifications that are already set in place. What we believe by allowing it to be at a school level rather than at a school district, we don't make them make a choice of that school district because one school wasn't able to get there has to do all paper. So we allow the flexibility as close as we can to the classroom level. We have even had conversations conceivably about doing it at the student level, but you can imagine the logistical challenge that would be.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, Madam Chair, our committee does a good job of working together. And, you know, culturally with the 24-hour amendment, the 24-hour rule, we've always kind of done it in the sense that it was so that the majority didn't get ambushed. No, authors of bills did not get ambushed at the last second. I'm okay with us taking the A2 amendment and putting in. I always want to reduce my carbon footprint.
How about
Madam
A1
Chair?
And A2? Both?
As long as the members of the committee are informed.
Anybody
on
object?
It?
Representative Kalin, I'll move the A1 amendment. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, if I could actually ask for the for you to move the A2 amendment and to hold off on the A1 amendment just because I think we
I'll move the A2 amendment.
Great.
Any
thank
further
you.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Amendment is adopted. Motion prevails.
No.
Did anyone oppose it? Yes. Okay. Let the record reflect.
Madam Chair, just that background on the A1 amendment that this is the language I had it drafted to represent the department's proposal. I don't have strong objections to it, but I think that we could continue to just make sure that we're balancing flexibility versus too much.
So, Representative Kalin, you may have a new version of that have someone on the committee
correct.
Offer at markup.
And I just want to direct folks to what I think is in your packet, the communication from the Anoka-Hennepin District with some very specific concerns.
Speaking of which, is Mr. Plant here or is it just the written testimony? Just the written testimony.
Just the written.
Okay.
Yeah.
Representative Newton and then Anzell.
Okay, and I'll be very brief, Madam Chair, thank you. And that's, I wanted to address this, the comments from Manolo Canepin. We're generally supportive of the bill, but the devil's in the details. We would like to make sure that it's tied down so that we don't end up with some of the costs that you were referring to, Representative Dimmer. And I appreciate it if we could hear from the department and from you, Representative Kalin. We don't have to have it right now, but just to make sure that it is tightened up. Thank you.
And anything that costs money or has mandates that cost money is pretty dead in the water, so that's a very important question. Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think I have a quarrel with what you're trying to accomplish here, but I have to ask, are we doing this for the department or are we doing this for the school districts?
Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair and Representative Anzell, your question is right on. The genesis of the idea came out of frustration that I heard, actually, when I first ran for office in 2004 from my district that's now considering in such deep trouble that they're considering a four-day, they've actually preliminary approved a four-day school week. Their concern had been over they really get great utility out of the NWEA is the Measures of Academic Progress Computer Adaptive Test, and that the MCA2s, the MCAs, have been very frustrating for them because of their lack of turnaround time and ability to use the information as much. So I've been working with all the stakeholders in this room and have asked them for input, and they all, at this point, are supporting the bill. We will address the Anoka-Hennepin issues. Dr. Mattson and I have to sit down and actually kind of walk through them individually as well as with Mr. Plant. But I want it to work for schools.
Very good. All right. Is there any testimony? I have one person. Anybody else? Okay. Mr. Heller, you've got about 30 seconds.
You can sit here, Mr. Heller. Go ahead.
Welcome. Please state your name, and we do need you to be real concise.
Hi, Chair. My name is Rick Heller. I thought I'd follow up. I was in the last discussion with these two gentlemen before we never got together. I'd like to talk briefly about this assessment and adaptive computer. Again, it's a universal design principle. Obviously, we all know that the state uses those principles. I hear that they're stripping that from some language. I have a concern about that. That's got nothing to do with this bill. However,
you need to stick to this bill, and we really are almost out of time.
And as far as the AYP regarding schools and districts, I don't know if it's, as we all know, value added was added. This will be the second year they're gathering those data points. That is part of the statute and part of No Child Left Behind. As far as them being reported on students' IEPs, that's not being done. That would be out of federal compliance. As far as them using the universal design principles for value added, it's my understanding they're using condensed bubble sheets, which is paper format, which is completely separate from the booklet. That is in violation of universal design principles.
Hey, Mr.
And then schools are individually, and districts are individually deciding, again, regarding line 524, they're individually deciding among themselves of what format they're using for those principles. It's something to consider since data is important to become reliable and valid.
Thank you very much. We're out of time. Representative Kalin, one closing statement, and you have about 10 seconds.
I just appreciate your consideration and ask for your support and to stand strong in the Senate and to prevail this time to get this into law. I know we can beat them, Madam Chair, and it's good for schools and good for students.
Thank you. 34.
Thank you.
43 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Kalin. Representative Mariani. You have a high standard to meet that Representative Kalin just met.
Okay. Madam Chair, would it be appropriate to make a motion at this point? Or?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, I would move that House File 3163 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Representative Mariani moves House Bill 3163 be laid over for possible inclusion. And you have an author's amendment. Do you want to take that up first, Representative Mariani?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Let me get the number. I would move the 819 amendment.
The A19 amendment, Representative Mariani moves. Would you explain that, please?
Madam Chair, there are four parts to the A19 amendment. I'll explain it more fully as I walk quickly through the highlights of the bill. One has to do with an amendment to Representative Bly's bill in regards to alternative, in regards to at-risk students, which should make this committee happy because basically it should get our fiscal note down to zero on that.
Yay.
And the second part has to do with language related to an amendment that Representative Loon put on the bill in regards to the Governor's Teacher Transformation Act, and just clarifies what we mean by penalty when we're looking at the data sharing between the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education. My understanding is that it's the same language that's currently being used in terms of penalties that apply between the Department of Education and the Health and Human Services Department. The third part clarifies some language that the department had brought in on non-teacher employees and contractors serving in charter school boards. So it's the same intent as the department's. It's just clearer language. And then the fourth part of the amendment has to do with, Representative Bly's bill, where basically we just had an error in drafting the language. And so we're going to add monthly as opposed, or rather we're going to add quarterly in place of monthly. And I'll, Madam Chair, that would be my
Any
motion.
Questions on Representative Mariani's A19 amendment? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, the minority offers no objections to the amendment being under the 24-hour deadline.
Thank you. And I didn't even notice this one, so I appreciate you pointing that out and that you have no objections. Nope. Thank you. And if you do have any, and I forget to notice the time, speak up.
No. Madam Chair, I mean, again, we have a – I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page, that we – I think the purpose of the rule is so that people aren't surprised by it. And obviously, whether it's a couple hours short of the 24-hour deadline is not certainly what I don't think our committee intends to do.
Thank you very much. And we do have that timeline so that we all can know ahead of time. But if it's something we agree on, it's great, too. Okay. With that, then, all in favor of the A19 amendment?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo, for that as well. Members, we walked through this bill a week or two ago. This is the guts of the bill is basically the department's policy bill, and so we spent quite a bit of time walking through the elements. So I'm not going to repeat those pieces. What I want to do is just highlight for members what's happened to the bill since then in terms of the amendments that we made in policy committee. And basically, there are seven major areas of additions to the bill, as well as four other provisions that are new but don't fall under the major category. Major category one has to do with the Safe School Levy, maintenance of effort for school support staff, where we remove the maintenance of effort portion of that language. The second part has to do with alternative teacher preparation and licensure, an issue that this legislature has wrestled with for a little while now. What we did is basically add Representative Slocum's bill to this bill. This committee also has possession of Representative Slocum's bill, and it basically authorizes the Board of Teaching to do rulemaking that would implement a two-year limited term license, and then it would also hold all programs, including any alternative programs, added to the same accountability standards in terms of meeting a high threshold for candidates achieving full licensure. The third major component here are key elements of, or major elements of the Governor's Teacher Transformation Act, and I'm sure that the department could speak more specifically to a number of the provisions here. Among them, they would require candidates to pass skills exam for entrance into a teacher prep program. You don't need to pass a skills exam in order to enter a teacher prep program. It would require elementary licensure tests to include mathematics. It requires the Board of School Administrators to adopt national principal licensing standards. It permits the Board of Teaching, the Board of School Administrators, and the Department of Education to share teacher and principal data for the purpose of preparation program accountability. So it's for the sake of being able to evaluate those programs. It directed teachers can't renew provisional licenses without passing the skills exam. It requires teacher prep programs to include two online courses, and it aligns the teacher license standard revision cycle to mirror the K-12 academic standards revision cycle. The fourth piece has to do with Representative Greiling. It's Representative Greiling's Board of Teaching required to seek legislative approval before embarking on rulemaking. The fifth major provision is Representative Bly's bill, which basically looks at the issue of aligning and getting our entire K-12 system to be successful with students that are currently placed in alternative school settings, sets up a process by which the state would study and collect information about successful practices that are occurring in alternative learning environments so that those can be shared and replicated in regular, if you will, educational learning environments, with the goal being that we should fully expect that all our students, whether they're highly at risk, as currently symbolized or represented by students in alternative learning environments, that all students achieve the same high quality certification, the same diploma. And members, I think this is a pretty exciting idea about making sure that we are not just falling into the temptation of just allowing sort of, you know, washing our hands of children that we have the most difficult time providing for a decent education in our regular education schools. And then the sixth provision would add to rulemaking, or would direct the Department of Education to do rulemaking on ELL standards. This is a provision that was in Representative Garofalo's / Department Finance bill. It was added in committee by Representative Depke. And then the final major provision, Madam Chair, is including Representative Katz's professional growth and best teaching practices, which would require, for the sake of relicensure, professional reflection and growth and best teaching practices is one of the three required areas of relicensure. And then there are four other provisions here that members should pay attention to. One is three of them come out right out of the department's policy bill. One is clarifying school districts' access to unsecured lines of credit. I believe it might have an amendment coming forward on that. The other is requiring school districts to participate in field testing of state assessments. This goes to the issue of the random state assessments that are conducted under NAEP and perhaps TIMS, I'm not quite sure, but certainly under NAEP and perhaps some others as well, that require in order for the testing to be valid to have a representative sample across the state of districts reflecting different demographic characteristics to participate. And then the department also proposed that career tech programs be eligible for concurrent enrollment program aid. And then finally, Madam Chair, members, we had an amendment where we would require the reporting of K-12 outcomes data for young children with hearing loss who receive early intervention services. Madam Chair, very quickly, those are the major new provisions, and otherwise important or major provisions that members, I would argue, should pay attention to as we continue to vet this bill in this committee.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. That's a very helpful summary, highlighting the highlights, especially for those of us who serve on policy, to refresh our memories but not go on and on when we did hear a lot about it. So very nice. We have a lot of questions. Representative Tilbury.
Yes, Madam Chair, and Representative Mariani, as you know, on section, in Article 1, Section 7 on the Safe Schools Levy, you know as well as all the committee members, I believe, know my position with that. But I want to point something out, especially that happened yesterday, when Representative Benson and I had removed amendments, or had an amendment to remove some pieces out of our particular bill. It was because this particular provision is in this particular bill. And so everyone will have a chance to say their points on this particular thing. We just felt it wasn't necessary to have it on our mandate reduction bill at that time. And so we followed the rules of the group here that were given to us, and since a bill was already traveling with this, we would not consider it. So at this time, I'm not making any motion to try to remove it or amend it. I'm willing to let it go through the process and see where it lands.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury, for clarifying that. Yesterday, we thought we were voting on a substantive amendment just to take it out there and have the substantive discussion here, which we understand better now. So thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Maria, thank you for your summary of the bill. Since I don't sit on ed policy, it was very helpful. My question is about alternative teaching licensure. And I applaud your efforts to bring in more diversity into the classroom. I personally would like to see more physically disabled educators in the classroom. I think the more diversity we have, the better our children will become, period, eventually. But let me ask you this question, Representative Mariani. Does the alternative teaching licensure include any provision for pre-student teaching and student teaching?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, thank you for the question. There were two bills that moved out of our committee relative to this issue. One bill, which is basically the same bill I had last year, we moved straight to the floor. And that bill took the same approach that we took last year, where we simply wrote into statute the criteria and the parameters around a approach to an alternative teacher licensure program. The other bill, Representative Slocum's bill, we did move here twice, I suppose, now. That bill took a different approach, as opposed to being overly, as opposed to being prescriptive, if you will. It adopted the posture that we would direct the Board of Teaching to embark on rulemaking and have the Board of Teaching then vet through what those criteria and key elements of a high-quality alternative teacher program would look like. And so there are a number of questions similar to yours about key elements that are not present here because the structure of the bill was not meant to be present. However, Madam Chair, it certainly is appropriate, even as you're directing in rulemaking, to add important criteria to that.
Madam Chair,
Representative Ward.
Just a follow-up then, please. And Representative Mariani, I want to just talk about both those components, pre-student teaching and student teaching experience, just with some personal experiences real quickly, Madam Chair. Recently I saw on a Dateline, I think the program was, or 2020, or one of those documentary programs, where doctors, medical doctors in our country, after they've done their book learning, do a year or more of residency. They actually take their book learning and practice for a year residency, putting their, you know, book skills back into real life practice. And the doctors that were on that show said that they believe they became better medical doctors due to the hands-on kind of experience. I want to carry that over to my own person, my son. My son was going into education to be a math and science teacher. He waited until his last semester of college to student teach. we have four children, and my wife's a teacher, and three of our four kids were going into education. I was an educator, so it seemed like a natural for our family. My son finished his math science double major to become a teacher, and then did his student teacher last semester, and he said to me, he called me at home, and he said, "Dad, I don't think I want to be a teacher anymore," after he did his student teaching experience. My point is this: that student teaching experience also gives feedback to folks about if it's a right career or not. I really strongly want to support anything that we do looking at alternative programs to include a pre-student teaching experience along with a student teaching experience, because it's so much it gives so much value to both hands-on and feedback about this education as a career. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And I think we have an amendment from Representative Benson later to talk about this, but Representative Mariani, for now, do you want to comment? Okay. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mariani, two issue areas. One, the alternative teacher licensure. Do we currently require folks with community expert waivers to have had student teaching experience, classwork in pedagogy, and things like that?
Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, to my knowledge, we don't.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani, thank you for clarifying. I do have a concern about the requirement, I believe you stated, and I've been looking for the language and not found it yet, requiring teacher prep candidates to take two online courses as part of their preparation. And it's a return on investments question, I guess. Recent media reports have been surprising in indicating that online courses actually, the Minsky system at least, charges a higher tuition for online courses than bricks and mortar. It's counterintuitive. The whole argument about efficiencies and that sort of thing apparently doesn't work. And so I'm wondering, we're in an era when we're asking students to pay higher and higher tuition. We're coming in here with a mandate that says, now we want you to pay even higher and put more of a barrier in front of students coming into teaching, particularly lower income teacher candidates. What's the benefit of me as a teacher learning whatever in an online setting as opposed to bricks and mortar?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, it probably would be appropriate to have the department answer that question, as that was one of the elements in the Teacher Transformation Act that Representative Loon added onto this bill.
Commissioner Clensing.
Hi. Welcome. Chair Greiling, members of the committee, Karen Clensing, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Education. Representative Dabney, the reason for that proposal is that we're seeing exponential growth in online learning and the demands for online courses amongst K-12 students, including hybrid courses at the regular traditional schools. And so we felt it important that every teacher have experience teaching, knowing pedagogy for teaching online coursework, as well as have experience being an online student themselves. So it would be at least one course should be online, and then the other course has to be at least online pedagogy. And we do experience through our professional development that a number of the teachers are not as comfortable with this kind of learning environment as the students are and as the demand for it exists.
Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. I had a year or two ago, I'm sure this is something that's germane, 23.32 to 34 is where I should look. Thank you. Was that Carmen? Thank you very much. We do get along. We do work well across the tables here. I did have a proposal a couple of years ago, I think, to establish an academy opportunity for teachers on technology, because I think the department is correct that I know my experience as a teacher was there was a gap between the technology that I had available, hardware and software, and my knowledge and comfort level about how to best implement it, why I should implement it at this point in my curriculum versus the other. I guess I would still point out that taking my car to the auto repair shop doesn't make me an auto mechanic, and so taking an online course doesn't tell me how to teach an online course. And so I'm not convinced that we're hitting the bullseye fully. I know we're shooting two different arrows. I'm not sure we're hitting the bullseye on both.
Commissioner Clensing.
Representative Dabney, that's why it says that they must require online pedagogy, mm-hmm. and that online pedagogy requirement is that requirement of how to teach that online course, not, and I guess, in your example, how to fix that car. So, and what you're mentioning about that gap, too, Marzano recently has come out with some research that showed having that technology in the classroom did not increase student achievement, but having that technology in the classroom with the teacher who knew how to use it, they did see 17% gains in student achievement in those classes.
Madam Chair, you might look for that legislation back next year, then.
That sounds like a deal, Representative Dabney. We're going to hear from two more legislators, Ms. Allschweiger, and then we'll see if there's any other testimony, and we'll go to amendments. Representative Newton and Representative Detmer. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to refer to page 39, Article 3 on special programs. I'd like to have that Section 1 deleted. And the reason for this is last year, as you know, we worked very closely with all of the interest groups on special ed. And what I'm finding here is that the department has essentially taken their rules and have adjusted the statute to the rules rather than the other way around. And I had a very nice email from the department explaining their rationale for it, one of them being they said they didn't have enough time last year to do this. But Madam Chair, if I may, we went through hours and hours of work with lawyers on every single word in special education, and to have it changed for no good reason. I'm sure maybe there is a good reason, but I question the wisdom of doing this, and I think it's better to reconvene that group with the department and to go over the special ed requirements. And I just want to point out just one thing. If you look on line 3912, next to last word is you're taking out disability you're putting in impairment, essentially. And then on line 3914, you're taking out impairment and putting in disability. It makes absolutely no sense at all. So I would appreciate it if we could strike that section.
Thank you, Representative Newton. So I think we won't take all the testimony for this today since we are doing the amendments that we had 24 hours, but this gives us notice that you will be coming forward to strike it. Perhaps you could check with Representative Mariani and all the players, and he's shaking his head, yes, I think it's just what was in the bill. So why don't you come with that agreed upon when we mark up the bill, and I don't think that there'll be a problem as long as you work it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You did do very fine work with that last year, so we take a lot of you have a lot of credibility with us. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the same concerns as Representative Ward over there in terms of alternative teaching license. I just can't picture anybody walking into a classroom of 35, 40 students that haven't gone through student teaching. I really believe that student teaching is a big part of preparing people to be educators. So student teaching would be a big concern of mine if it wasn't included. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and that's a good entree for Ms. Allschweiger. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allschweiger, Education Minnesota. And I would just make a brief comment that on pages 8 and 9, we would support deleting the Safe Schools Levy language because we believe that during these difficult economic times that there are additional stresses on families, and these licenses support professionals such as counselors, social workers, nurses, etc. They provide a very, very valuable service to the students and to the parents and community of the school district. So we would encourage you to leave current law. And then I would focus the rest of my testimony on the alternative teacher preparation language, which will be no surprise to any of you. And I first must say to Representative Mariani that I know that his intentions are all in the right direction, that Representative Mariani and the supporters of this bill language want to close the achievement gap and provide other alternatives for individuals to enter the teaching profession. We think those are wonderful goals, and we fully support them. Our issue is with how this is done. And I would also agree with Representative Ward, Representative Detmer, and some of their comments. This language is giving the authority to the Board of Teaching, a politically appointed group of individuals, to make decisions. And one could argue, what is it better to have language defined specifically in law, as Representative Mariani's bill is, as that went to the floor, or should you have one that is debated in rulemaking? The issue with the rulemaking is you don't know exactly what it is going to look like. So those are some questions to ask of yourself. Representative Dabney had a question about community experts. It is an issue. We don't feel that there should be community experts out there, but there is in a few places because of a teacher shortage area, which is getting smaller and smaller as an issue. And so I think we, instead of providing a kind of a wide open alternative to teacher preparation, we should address specifically the problems related to community experts rather than opening it wide across the state. I would like to make some specific comments about the language. If you look at line 20.4, this, I think, is our main objection. And it is the objection that some of you have raised, that the teacher with a limited term license would be the teacher of record. There is no requirement for student teaching under a supervising licensed teacher. Now, this is what's really ironic. If I asked you, would you support language that reduced the probationary period for teachers from 3 years to one, would you support that? A number of you would not. Why wouldn't you? Because a number of you would say, not everyone here, you would say, you want to make sure that that person who enters the teaching profession as a licensed teacher to prove, even though they have a license, that they are a competent teacher. And during the probationary period, they don't have any right to due process. They can be terminated. If you support a fairly lengthy, such as 2 or 3 year probationary period, I would challenge you to ask yourself, why would you support language that would make it much easier to become a teacher? You would not have to go through a student teaching period in a classroom. Because Education Minnesota's main concern is that individuals who go through possibly a 200-hour program, 5 weeks in the summer, would be given a full classroom. They would be the teacher of record. Yes, there will probably be teachers popping in and out that could be called mentors, coaches, or supervising teachers, but these individuals would be given a classroom of 30, 35, 40 kids, and the kids would, in many respects, be an experiment as to whether that teacher could perform or not. Contrast that to the 3 year probationary period. Once you're already licensed, once you already went through your student teaching experience, let's just say.
And Ms. Hallstrager, could we have you finish up fairly soon, because we've got several amendments here, and one of them is on this point, so we'll have more discussion again.
Okay, let's just say that most every one of these teachers do well. Let's say 1 out of 10 doesn't do well. Because they didn't have student teaching experience, they didn't have the opportunity to prove whether they even had that first chance of doing well. So that 1 out of 10 individuals has just affected 30, 35 kids in biology, science, math, whatever it is. We think that that's a problem. I'd also just point out that during these budget times, we all know that school districts are going to cut teachers. They're going to cut math, phys ed, special ed, science, you name it. Next year will likely be even worse. These people will be looking for jobs. The shortage areas that we think that may be there, I think, are going to be changing drastically. Our testimony is all about having quality individuals in the classroom. And we would look forward to working with Representative Mariani or any others to provide an alternative teacher preparation program that puts quality people who have had the quality individuals who have had the opportunity to prove themselves in a student teaching experience before they are given a license.
Thank you very much. Is there any other general testimony on the bill? Otherwise, we'll hear one more time from the author and then go to amendments. Any other testimony? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, just very quickly, and obviously this deserves a much longer discussion, alternative teacher licensure. You know, doing things differently is always very difficult to do, members. And we may not have the perfect way in language here on how to do this, but I have to say that I reject the notion that we simply cannot do things differently. It's not a matter of whether there may be shortage areas that exist out there. They, in fact, do exist. And so ignoring reality, to me, is also not an acceptable thing. I want to point out to members on lines 19.33 and 19.35, it is different, admittedly, but it requires school-based experience for under which a limited-term license candidate would be supervised, observed, mentored, and evaluated throughout the time the teacher is teaching in the classroom. So members, you know, other parts of the country have had tremendous success in doing very responsible alternative pathways for incredibly gifted and talented folks to enter our teaching corps. Those have been extensively evaluated in a number of research across the nation. I would encourage members to look at that research, study that before you make a decision relative to this. But Madam Chair, I know you're pressed for time here. I just wanted to do a very quick response here, and I do want to acknowledge that, you know, we may not have the perfect way to do this. What we did this year was basically create two different approaches here, one heavily prescribed in statute and the other relying on the fact that we do have a board of teaching that we own, that we create in statute, and whose decisions are always subject to our decisions in statute. And it's something that they keep in mind as they do their rulemaking.
Thank you very much. We'll go to amendments now, and Representative McFarland is not here. Is there anyone that wants to author hers? Otherwise, we'll wait until she's back in the room. She and Representative Swales are presenting a bill in another room. Representative Demmer, the 2386 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A236 amendment, members, is about the payment, allowing payments from school districts. And I think this is an attempt to clarify the intent of what we're doing in the bill. On page 9, line 18, after the, it would be the school district, charter school, or other education organization. And I think that's an attempt to say that payments that come from the state must go to one of these, either a school district, charter school, or other. And then in conjunction with that, on page 34, we could delete section 19, which I think refers to charter schools assigning their payments. I think the idea is that the change made on page 9 will cover that. And it kind of clarifies it clarifies and sums that up.
Very good. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'd leave that to the will of the committee.
Questions from members? All right. If there's no discussion, then anybody have, I have a comment in the audience. On this amendment, Mr. Heller? Okay, let's wait till we have general testimony, because we're on an amendment. Anybody from the department have a... Okay, then. All in favor of the A10-2386 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Garofalo, you have the A10-2319 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this amendment does is it takes any leftover funds that are in the E-Pass program and allows them to use it for data collection and analysis by the state. Again, only if those are extra funds, those unexpended funds are available for those purposes.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'd leave that to the will of the committee.
And Representative Garofalo, what might look good today, later when we're looking for money for other things, there may be some other calls on this money, but for today, this looks like we at least keep the money in our committee and under discussion. Any other comments on this amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The A10-2320 amendment, also Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair and members, we've had previous discussions regarding the minimum length of the school year. Sort of an outdated statute that we have is right now we reference the number of days based off of instruction in 96 and 7. It's really a meaningless indicator in terms of the amount of learning or classroom time students are receiving. So what this does is it changes it to hours of instruction, and the corresponding reduction in aid for those school districts that do not abide by that provision. That is a synopsis of the 2320 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. This is one I don't like, but we'll let Representative Mariani see what he has to say first.
Sure, you may want to hear from folks in the audience.
Yes. Do you want to make a comment as the author first, Representative Mariani, or not?
I'm with you on this one, but I think you should hear from folks in the audience.
Very good. Representative Ward.
I have two, Madam Chair, I have two 2320s in my folder. I don't know if the rest of you do, and one has handwritten changes on the lines and one is not. Which one are we with?
Representative Ward, we're on the one with the changes. Apparently the lines and so forth were not quite up to snuff, and so that's the one that used the amendment that's up to snuff. Anybody in the audience care to comment on the A10-2320 amendment, hours of instruction?
You want her to get that.
Hearing none, any other comments from the members of the committee? Thank you. Mr. Schneiderwin.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kirk Schneiderwin. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I think one of the issues that we're concerned about is the effective date, knowing that we're going into a collective bargaining session next year, that if we're going down this road, that we need to think about that for 1 year out. I think the second issue for us is that during these difficult economic times, I think we need to look at this closely and make sure that this does not require a number of additional days for some school districts that in turn, well, I mean, in a sense, your collective bargaining agreement will be able to iron those out in the next collective bargaining session. But I think we need to be sensitive to that issue, that if we're looking at reductions and we're looking at greater shifts, that this requirement doesn't put too much of a burden on those districts.
Thank you very much. And members, you will remember that we had the handout of all the districts affected by this language that Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow prepared for us. It included one of my Roseville schools, in fact. And so in a time when we're trying to make sure that we're not having any unfunded mandates on districts, that's, you know, I like a longer school year. I'm a strong supporter of extended time revenue, and I know Representative Mariani is. But it's just the unfunded nature of this mandate that is troubling to me in a time when districts are already under siege. Anybody else on this one? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I guess to that point, two things. I'm guessing from Mr. Schneiderman, if I wanted to ask him, if he's still here, if we pushed out the implementation date to a change that he recommended, if he would then support the bill or not. I'm guessing by his laugh that the answer is no. The second point is, Madam Chair, I take a different perspective on the unfunded mandate portion of this. What's happening is right now is that the taxpayers are paying for a level of service to be provided that is not similar throughout the state. That we are getting more bang for the buck in one school district than we are for the other. And I just view this as getting what the taxpayers are paying for. That's how I interpret this in that level of uniformity. And again, the number of days is it's just not an accurate indicator of the amount of class time instruction. Thank you.
And Representative Garofalo, the way I view it is districts have to cut corners because we have funded them so poorly. So we have some school districts that look at busing schedules and how they can make efficiencies, and that unfortunately means that we lose hours for some of our students. And that's, in fact, the case with the one district that I checked with in my district, where they had to run the same bus for this alternative school as some other bus. And, you know, buses cost money, and if you're going to have to be inefficient with them, you're going to have to spend more money. So when there isn't enough money, you cut corners, and it means cuts in corners in the quality of our students' education. And that's what this, what the problem with this amendment is, to me. If we're going to want to require things like this, which are excellent, then we have to pay for them. Any other discussion on this amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. No.
Can I vote for division, Madam Chair?
I was going to call it as a pass.
Never mind, then. Go ahead.
The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. The A10-2321 amendment, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. When I see the gavel going up, I know I have to make the call before the gavel hits down. And
you do.
So, Madam Chair, what this amendment does is really, right now there's a quirk in law where school districts can get extended time revenue even though they're not offering the extended time program. I believe the savings, if I remember right, is about $10,000 a year. That's the fiscal note on it. What happens is because for declining enrollment school districts, you have the option of taking your AMCPU count from the previous year. You could actually be funded for a program that you're no longer offering. This eliminates that that situation. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, it seems logical and fair to me.
Any discussion on this amendment from the members or the audience? Hearing none, all in favor of the A10-2321 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And members, that's the end of our amendments that made the time deadline, including one that did not, but that we allowed. There is, Representative Benson has an amendment that we will now pass out. This one really didn't make the time deadline. So
I'm good at it.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
So I'm going to have the pages. Do they have it now?
They have
okay. It is the A3163A21 amendment. We will have Representative Benson explain it so we all understand it, and then we'll check with members to see if you want to do it or wait on it. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the reason is late. I will take no responsibility, as many around here do not, for this because I was approached to present this, so I agreed to do so. Anyway, we will find it on page 19, line 29, and you can see that the word after the word degree, we insert complete a minimum 200-hour instructional phase, provides intensive preparation, and then in line 30, we get rid of a redundant word must. If you pass, you pass, I guess. Okay, so the reason for this amendment is to at least bring the requirement up to what we would consider a requirement for those who are participating in Teach for America. And so it's at least a minimum.
Okay. Questions from members on this amendment? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I think it's a good amendment. As I commented or responded to Representative Ward, obviously, the structure here is a rulemaking directive to the Board of Teaching. That still does not bar the legislature in the process of issuing that request to lay out some important criteria. I'm hearing that this is an important criteria for us to ensure that if there's a rule that comes forward, that it involves this element in it. So I would be supportive of it.
Okay. Any other questions or wantings to understand of the amendment before we decide whether or not to vote on it today? Representative Detmer.
Madam
Detmer.
Chair, could you repeat the was that an oral amendment?
Representative Detmer, it's the A21 amendment that was just passed out. It says H3163A21.
Madam Chair, so 200 hours, that would, what, is that about 3 weeks of student teaching?
Representative Benson.
5 weeks?
I'm sorry.
Representative
would you repeat Netmer. That?
How many weeks are we talking about here?
Representative Benson.
About 8 weeks, I believe. 7 to 8 weeks.
Representative Detmer.
Pardon? Okay. Thank you.
So, Representative Detmer, I think that Representative Benson is trying to address your concern, where there wasn't any student teaching, and Representative Ward's concern. So I'm guessing,
and my concern.
Two of, and his concern. So I'm guessing the three of you like this amendment.
Madam Chair?
Representative Mariani.
I just want to be correct about the math. It's 5 weeks. It should be clear.
Well, these people have longer lunch breaks, Madam.
3, 8, and 5. Boy, if Representative Mariani is getting the math right and the other people aren't, after I saw his test score on that math test. Ms. Allswagger.
Madam Chair, members, Jan Allswagger, Education Minnesota, I'll be very brief. This really has nothing to do with student teaching. This is, I believe, instructional phase that provides intensive preparation. This is classes. This would be 5 weeks of classes if you had a 40-hour week. This says nothing about a student teaching experience. So we would, does this make it better? Certainly not to the point that we would even come close to supporting it.
Thank you very much. Representative Benson, do you want to have any comment on that?
No, ma'am. I don't have any.
Very good. Okay. Any other questions then on the amendment?
Other than say anything that moves forward is good.
That's good. All right. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. My name is Ann Molly. I'm the Vice President of Recruitment for Teach for America. I'm based here in Minneapolis. I grew up here, was a product of Robbinsdale School Districts, public schools, and was a 1992 Teach for America core member. So I'd like to address the comment that was just made. In fact, the 200 hours of instruction include student teaching. In the Teach for America model, our core members spend 5 weeks in classrooms supervised by exceptional teachers who have worked with those students year-round and are constantly provided with ongoing feedback, critique, and then are expected, as most exceptional professionals are, to turn around the feedback in the next day and improve their practice throughout that five-week experience. So they are teaching kids. They set academic goals for their students during that five-week period, and they are measured against the degree to which their students increase their academic performance over that five-week period. So they are working with students in real classrooms in real schools. And I'd also like to just make one other point of information that I was listening to, which is interesting to me, in that alternative certification teachers through this bill are held in some ways to a slightly higher standard for entry into the classroom. They are required to pass the basic skills test before they step foot into a classroom in the state of Minnesota, whereas teachers who are licensed through a more traditional route are able to take that test, and I was just reading the bill as I sat down, so I'm not exactly sure, but multiple times, I think up to a period of 3 years. So they could be instructing children in schools for up to 3 years without having passed the basic skills test. Alternatively, certified teachers would need to pass that before they step foot in a Minnesota classroom.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the A3163A21 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and that amendment is adopted. And we are now at the end of our amendments. And the department has asked to testify on the bill as amended. Welcome. We haven't seen you around here for quite a while in this building.
I know. Thank you. I'm not sure how to respond to that. I've missed you also.
It's good to see you.
We missed you.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, Jesse Montagna with the Minnesota Department of Education. I do have one comment on the amendment that was submitted on page 16, and we're happy to work with the author. I believe that the language in here, which identifies a number of funding sources, is intended to support the initiatives in this bill. Some of those I don't think are conducive to the intent and would be willing to work with the author to come up with some language that would fit better. For example, graduation incentives is not a a grant. It's actually state aid that goes to state-approved alternatives and ALCs and so forth. So some of these, we understand the intent, and I think we're willing to work to make the language better.
Thank you. And Chair Mariani is shaking his head yes. He's always willing to work with everyone. So any other general testimony? Mr. Heller, this is your chance. This is general testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Rick Heller. Thank you for this opportunity to speak again. I spoke late night, was this week or not, however. I had brought up the one of the areas of interest in this bill is on G 10.1 and 2. I had to hand a flyer out from Dr. Royd, which is about the Sanford-Binet that night, and it has to do with the twice exceptional at the last meeting they had here, and then the department clarifying that for you, and it looks like it's going to be gifted and those with a disability. However, the flyer I hand out, and those who are listening, comes from a complaint from to the Minnesota Department of Education to a district in Bloomington regarding how, file 09005H. As we all know, Now Child Left Behind also help accommodate those that are twice exceptional or gifted, not just those that are struggling to achieve. The handout specifically, if you look at page 53, and I put a star on that page, and it specifically says, I circle gifted cognitively. The Sanford-Binet is specifically for gifted cognitive, meaning it breaks it down in five specific areas and IQs. When a kid can learn faster, for instance, an average IQ is 7 to 10 repetitions. But when a kid can learn faster, it's important to identify those strengths. And when you leave out the cognitive piece, it kind of leaves it wide open. Many continuous improvement plans, district have implemented training for the Sanford-Binet 5, for instance. Again, it's important to identify the cognitive piece because, as we all know, those who can learn faster perhaps can close the gap in those skills or those unique needs those kids have and strengths. It's important that's utilized. Appreciate your time on this. I would hope that you would consider that language if the department likes to speak on it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Heller, for your time. Representative Mariani, Madam closing
Chair,
comment.
Madam Chair, Representative Heller, Mr. Heller raises an important question. Representative Brown had asked the question about, in the prior hearing, what do we mean by twice exceptional? What I did is I used a layperson's interpretation of that to carve out gifted and learning disabled, which is my understanding of the intent of what twice exceptional. However, there may be some regulatory alignment issues with federal definitions. So the department is going to look at that. We may come back with some language change in that area.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Heller. Representative Mariani. And
if I could just, there's something that really gets to me about how the state apparently, it's my understanding so far, and frankly I could probably be totally wrong, however, because it appears that the MCAMs are moving the upper 1% of 2% off of the MCAs, this by using AYP for growth, for value added, I have a concern with them because the federal relaxed the cognitive disability, and now they're going to move.
Mr. Heller, I think we had your testimony. There's a couple legislators still, and we need a closing
thank
statement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Melcher, if you wouldn't mind coming down, I have a question about page 1, line 1.22 and 1.23. I suspect I might know why that language is in the bill, but I would just like some clarification. Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Dietrich, this language was brought to the department by the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget. It was intended to be a clarification of the current practice in managing the transfer of funds, and it just clarifies that interest that's earned on the interest that's going to be paid to school districts is included in the amounts that we're going to pay to the school districts, which reflects what we're currently doing. It just simply ensures that the school districts get all the money that they have coming.
Representative Dietrich. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Melcher. That's what I suspected. And I just want to point out permanent school advisory committee meeting, we had the MMB come and speak, and they talked about their current accounting practices. And actually, what they found is that there was, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, $2.5 million that accrued in interest from the money that was that before it goes to the department. And what they did was they deposited that money into the general fund because our 2008 law had not passed yet. And so what they did say, though, that they have corrected their accounting practices, and I think this is a reflection of that correction. And so for those of you who feel like maybe we don't need to be looking at school trust plans and we should be finding other solutions, I just want to encourage you to stay on board and stay listening and be open to change. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Mariani, you've got 2 to 3 minutes for your closing comment.
Madam Chair, 30 seconds.
Or less, as Representative Ward says.
I'll do the Ward approach. Look forward to next week as we mark up our omnibus bill, and obviously these elements will be on the table. Look forward to the debate and the decision-making. It's a privilege to be able to line up the policy committee with our finance committee, and we've done that very well over the past few years, and look forward to continue doing it.
Thank you very much, and members, we'll see you Tuesday at 8 a.m. Meeting's adjourned. 8:30.